The show is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the program today, I'm going to be talking first with pianist Rochelle Sennett, who is giving the opening recital in this year's Summer Piano Institute at the University of Illinois. And then we'll be talking with guitarist Charlie Hunter, jazz guitarist Charlie Hunter. He's going to be at the Canopy Club in Urbana tomorrow evening as part of a duo, and that show will be at 7 o'clock. So hope you'll stay with us for a bit of that. First, here's jazz bassist and colleagues, Larry Gray. That's bassist Larry Gray with guitarist John Mulder and drummer Charles Heath IV from Larry Gray's disc called 1-2-3 Chicago Sessions, and the tune is called No Doubt. Larry Gray is on faculty at the University of Illinois in Urbana and also plays all over the place, considered to be one of today's fine jazz bassists. This is Live and Local, and it's your performance connection. Among the performances you can go out and see and hear live this week are four recitals at the Illinois School of Music Summer Piano Institute, the first of which is being given by pianist Rochelle Sennett, who is on the U of I faculty. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And what can you tell me about the Institute this year? Is this simply a series of recitals, or are there any classes or master classes happening this year?
This year will be the four recitals and one master class, which I believe will be on Saturday by our guest pianist,
Boaz Charon.
Yes.
And we'll actually be talking with him later in the week and look forward to hearing some of his playing. And you're opening things off on, is it tomorrow or is it Thursday?
Wednesday at 7:30 at Krannert.
At the Krannert Center. Yourself and the other two two of the other U of I faculty members, William Hylas and Ian Hobson.
Yes.
And what do you have in store on your own recital?
Well, I'm very excited about this program. One of my favorite composers, of course, is Beethoven, so this will be the first time I'll be playing two Beethoven sonatas on one program, and I've chosen to do the last two. And one of my favorite countries, of course, besides America, of course, is Russia. I have a very strong affinity for a lot of Russian music, and so I decided to combine the two. So the first half will be one Russian work, ending with Beethoven Opus 110, and then the final half will be the Prokofiev Third Piano Sonata, and ending with the last Beethoven Piano Sonata.
Have you been to Russia?
I have, but it's been 15 years, but I actually am planning to go back in the spring.
And what did you do when you were there?
I studied at the Moscow Conservatory. So this was 15 years ago, for 3 weeks. It was an international summer program that was given there, and so I was invited.
And when you go back, are you going back for anything in particular, or are you just
possibly doing a recital, possibly some chamber music with another violinist?
And what's happening outside of your academic career, performance-wise? You know, where all have you been playing lately? Where are you playing soon?
Well, I'll be playing, I'm doing a series of concerts in Michigan. I actually just got back in the fall from Poland, so I'm very excited about that. I just got through recording chamber works by George Walker. As you know, I've been working on a long project featuring the works of George Walker, and so we just finished that project at Krannert a few weeks ago, so I'm very excited about that.
Well, let's hear, and on this Michigan recital, you did some Beethoven there.
I did Opus 106.
Which is the Hammer Clavier.
Yes.
Which is a huge work. Why does it get that name? Do you know?
Well, it's the longest Beethoven sonata. It takes about 40 to 45 minutes to play. It's four movements. The last movement, it has a notorious fugue. And in the third movement, it takes about 15, 16 minutes to play. And it's very, very long, very, very emotional work. So it does require a lot of the performer endurance-wise.
What makes the fugue notorious?
It goes on. It's usually with a Bach fugue. Usually goes on for a few pages, but this goes on. And then also it has a double fugue, and it's much more expansive, I would say.
What about the difficulty of it?
That's definitely part of it too.
That's part of its notoriety.
Yeah. Yes.
Why did you choose that particular sonata?
106.
Yeah.
It's one of the few that I hadn't played. I've actually studied 31 of the 32 sonatas. And so I figured, why not? I was told when I was younger that the late Beethoven sonatas, that is the last five sonatas, are their works in which you study them when you're young and then you leave it alone for a while because it's such mature works, and then you come back to it with a different understanding. So with the two sonatas I'm playing on my recital, it's kind of what I'll be doing, something I've studied years ago, and I'm just coming back to it with a different understanding, so I'm excited about it.
So this is the opening movement.
Yes.
Of the Hammer Clavier of Beethoven, Opus 106, performed by Rochelle Sennett at the University of Michigan?
No. It was at Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp.
Oh, good. And so this is a live recording?
Yes, this is live.
And you take what you get. But I assume you're pleased with it enough or you wouldn't have brought it in. When things are live, that's the way it goes. And it's live radio, too, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. heard the opening movement of the massive Hammerklavier Piano Sonata, that's the nickname, by Beethoven, his Opus 106,
correct,
as played live in Michigan at the Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp. I know there's a blue in it somewhere in Michigan, by Rochelle Sennett, who is my guest here on Live and Local. She's going to be playing Wednesday night a recital at the Krannert Center at 7:30. That will include a couple of Beethoven sonatas, and hers is the opening recital out of four at this year's University of Illinois Summer Piano Institute. The other recitals being given on Thursday by William Hylas, Friday by Boaz Sharon, and then he'll be giving a master class on Saturday.
Saturday, yes.
And then Ian Hobson giving the final recital in the series on Saturday night. And Rochelle, you said that you've been working on a recording project of music by George Walker,
yes,
who is African-American composer. Is he still alive?
He is. He's living in Montclair, New Jersey.
And how old a guy is he by now? Any idea?
He's close to 90. He's late 80s. Yeah, he was born in 1922.
Yeah, I thought he'd been around for a while. And the only piece that I know personally of his is of quite different character than all the other pieces that I've heard bits of, which is his Lyric for Strings,
sure, yes,
which is an extremely lyrical,
very
beautiful
lyrical
piece.
And
everything else I've heard is a lot more modern sounding. Mm-hmm. What's been your affinity for his music? What got you interested in it? And what all is in the recording project?
What I notice with all of the works, there is an extreme lyric quality, but also I like oftentimes percussive nature of it, and it's very daring for the pianist. So I think that's what attracted me at first.
When you say daring, you mean challenging and difficult?
Yeah, technically demanding in a lot of ways. But I like the extreme contrast of character, which is what really drew me to his music. He's a wonderful person. I had the pleasure of meeting him last May. I spent 2 hours working with him and getting his ideas about the concerto prior to recording it, which I recorded this past September in Warsaw, Poland.
And what else are you including on this recording?
What else is on the recording is also other chamber works, Abu, Icarus, and another work called Da Camera for piano, violin, and cello solo with a chamber orchestra.
And this is with Sinfonia of Varsovia?
The piano concerto is with Sinfonia of Varsovia. The other works were recorded here with Sinfonia de Camera.
And Ian Hobson conducting in both cases?
Yeah, in both cases.
And we have here the opening of George Walker's piano concerto.
Yes. This has not been recorded since 1975 or 1976. And so we were very excited about this particular work because it hasn't been recorded. It just kind of was, premiered a few times and was recorded, but then was sort of, forgotten.
And Rochelle Sennett is our guest, and she is the pianist in this performance. We'll hear a part of the opening movement here on Live and Local.
Thank you.
And you just heard the opening portion of the Piano Concerto of American composer George Walker with pianist Rochelle Sennett and Sinfonia Varsovia and conductor Ian Hobson, which is soon to be released on Albany Records. You're getting a sneak preview here because it isn't out yet. And Rochelle is giving the opening recital in the Summer Piano Institute at the University of Illinois School of Music on Wednesday night at the Krannert Center. No George Walkers on that recital, though.
Not on that recital.
Not on that recital. We've got Beethoven and Prokofiev, and what are the other Russians?
The other Russian is Shchedrin.
Oh, Rodion Shchedrin. I love his name.
Yeah. I'm actually beginning the program with that.
Yeah. So you were just telling me, as we were listening to this, the rather whirlwind experience of recording the George Walker Piano Concerto.
Yes, it was, like I said, it was recorded in Warsaw, Poland. It was a very brief visit. I left and then arrived the next day. And I met Ian Hobson was already there when I arrived. And so we rehearsed and we talked a little bit about what we were going to do the next day. And so I slept, made sure to sleep because, you know, they were on a very different time schedule. So the next day I rehearsed with the orchestra for 3 hours, and they were wonderful. They were very quick to pick up on his sound because they were already familiar with some of his works, having previously recorded it. And so we had 3 hours to rehearse. That was it. And then we took about an hour break and then record for 3 hours, and that was it.
Which in the world of recording is just... That doesn't happen.
Yes, it was. So we were very limited on time. So it was very, but I enjoyed the experience. I would have liked to have stayed in Warsaw longer. It was, you know, a beautiful city, what I did see. So I did, after we recorded, we did get a chance to see a few things. But yeah, it was very limited on time.
And I assume, obviously, the orchestra had rehearsed before you got there.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Otherwise, that would have been probably not fun for
you. No, not the best idea.
No. Well, you can go hear Rochelle on Wednesday at 7:30 at the Krannert Center, and appreciate your coming and sharing both of these recordings with us.
Oh, thank you for listening.
And best of luck on the recital.
Thank you.
And stay tuned for a conversation with jazz guitarist Charlie Hunter, who's going to be at the Canopy Club in Urbana tomorrow night at 7 o'clock with a duo show. Programs on WYNL are made possible in part today by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting the community to the return of Outside at the Research Park on Friday, July 8th at 7:30 p.m. featuring Del Castillo. More information is at krannertcenter.com. We just heard a tune called Crossings featuring guitarist Charlie Hunter from a gig at the Majestic Theater in Detroit way back in 1999. And who was with you on that duo?
Oh, that's just my myself and Adam Cruz. He's playing drums, and I think, does he play steel pan on that one too? I think he plays steel pan. Yeah, he's great.
And we're
fantastic musician. We're
talking with Charlie Hunter here on Live and Local because he is going to be at the Canopy Club in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus tomorrow, playing with another drummer, Derek Phillips, and just has a new CD out in which he plays entirely solo. We'll certainly talk about that in a little bit. First, thanks for joining us on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I was reading a little bit about your background, born in Rhode Island and spent some time with your family on a commune in California and got your guitar start in California. Did you do other music lessons as a kid?
Yeah, I started out on drums and, you know, but I grew up in Berkeley, California, and everyone in that town was, it just seemed like everyone played guitar. So there was this never, you know, kind of ending amount of guitar knowledge to be had. And I guess it's just kind of the direction that I ended up going in.
At what point did you start forming your own groups, whether duo, trio, quartet, or whatever?
I think around, I quit that hypocrisy band in the early 90s, so probably like 91 or 92, I started to get my own groups together. And just guys in the Bay Area that I had grown up with, you know, Dave Ellis and Jay Lane. And you know, so, yeah. And I've been doing it ever since.
I've always been a little curious, although I can certainly imagine some answers to this, what appeals to somebody like yourself about having your own band as opposed to being in somebody else's band, even though sometimes the net result musically might end up being rather similar?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it just depends, you know. I mean, the music, this whole music hustle is, you know, you spend a lot of time when you're young practicing and playing with people that are better than you as often as you can, and then you got to actually jump into the world and try to make a living doing it. And, you know, the currents of that river, such as they are, you never know where you're going to end up or where it's going to take you. So, you know, some people end up doing mostly side work. Some people end up being leaders. And for me, it's just like I ended up being a leader because I think I had a very special kind of an instrument that was not going to be able to just be kind of plugged and played into any situation, and who's going to hire this guy that does this weird thing. So I kind of had to do it myself, you know?
Well, since you've mentioned it, we better talk about this weird thing, because you started the weird thing early, and that's playing non-six-string or 12-string guitars.
Playing what?
Playing non-six-string guitars.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, in our society, we tend to, you know, view like the six-string guitar as like the kind of, you know, the standard guitar. And I mean, I guess it is kind of standard, but when you kind of look at the grander history of stringed instruments, you know, it's, you know, the guitar or the bass or any kind of plucked stringed instrument really is kind of like, you know, the everyman's instrument in every culture, and every culture has its own version of the guitar, you know, the amount of strings notwithstanding, what its purpose is. And, you know, I just kind of repurposed the idea of it to not be one of either like blazing kind of leads or a bass with lots and lots of stuff, you know, going on, but to try to put those two things together and make the most important aspect of it be the counterpoint between the two voices and the rhythmic the kind of stuff that happens when you put those two together. So there you have it in a nutshell.
Since you started playing on a seven-string guitar rather early, did this come from one of your teachers at the time, or was this an idea you had on your own?
Oh, no, yeah, it was on my own. I mean, I had stopped taking guitar lessons, I think, by the time I was 15 or so. And, you know, so yeah, it was just something that I kind of developed out of, you know, having spent a lot of time in the shed, you know, transcribing Tuck Andrus and Joe Pass, and also having, you know, been a bit of a drummer myself when I was younger, and spent a lot of time also playing bass. So, you know, it's just kind of a thing that it all just put itself together, you know, and I'm still struggling at it day after day.
Well, I want to play a cut from your new public domain CD, in which you do play solo, nobody else along with you. And then let's talk a little bit afterwards about how you're doing what you're doing.
Okay.
Maybe a little technically speaking. And this is Irving Berlin's tune. It's called Alexander's Ragtime Band. And again, it's Charlie Hunter. The disc is called Public Domain, and he's going to be at Canopy Club in Urbana tomorrow for a show at 7 o'clock. And you're listening to Live and Local. The tune was called Alexander's Ragtime Band. It was written by Irving Berlin, both words and music, but of course no words there. And everything you heard was played by one person, Charlie Hunter, on a seven-string guitar. And the disc is called Public Domain Solo. Charlie Hunter will be at the Canopy Club in Urbana tomorrow night, and he's with us on the phone right now. So you mentioned right before we played that you did play drums and you played a little bass way back when, and somehow maybe this seven-string idea was a product of all those. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you're actually doing and how the different strings function?
I mean, if anyone is familiar with, you know, bass or guitar, you know, I mean, it's plucking the strings, but, you know, so much of it has to do with, you know, the rhythmic counterpoint. And for each one of those songs, I'm thinking mostly about the groove and the drum feel that is really kind of the key and the underpinning to every one of those. And that's kind of the subtext that is not incredibly obvious all the time, but should be really obviously implied. And, you know, that's a big part of it. I mean, technically, from a, you know, just a nuts and bolts standpoint, you know, for someone, you know, I play bass and I play guitar as well, because you kind of have to do this instrument. It's technically way harder than that. Just like the amount of hours you have to put in just to get, you know, a little bit of music out of it is pretty intense. But I enjoy it. You know, I like the challenge, and I like every day going into the practice shed and trying to you know, figure out some, you know, new combination or whatnot, you know, so it works for me.
So you're using kind of the bottom three strings as the bass, and then the upper three playing rhythm and lead at the same time?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think of the bottom three strings mostly as, you know, bass strings, and the top four are guitar oriented. But within that, it's not as important the independence of the parts from another, it's more important the interdependence, you know. And that's quite a distinction I'd like to make, too, you know. It's really important that you know, you have all this counterpoint rhythmically down, but it's more important that it feels good when it's being played, and that's the interdependence of the parts, how they the rhythms that they create together, you know.
How is what you do different from what's called fingerstyle guitar, where often the thumb plays a bass line and then the other fingers play everything else, although most people do that on a sixth string?
Yeah, you can do. I mean, it's very similar. I mean, my style is very, you know, because you want to generate enough bass percussion to move with a drummer. You can't get away with the way that guitar players play bass. You have to play it like a bass player. And that makes the guitar side a lot harder to execute. Just, you know, it's just a physical thing. It just becomes much more difficult.
Talk about the sound in general that you're after. Also, I read that, I also read this on Wikipedia, so I hope it's accurate, that your previous guitar, an eight-string guitar, you were trying at some level to create a sound similar to a Hammond organ.
Yeah, that was a bit, when I was young, you know, when I was first starting out on it, that was a big part of what I was after. Because, you know, so many of my role models were Hammond organ players, you know, because who else really does that extended bass and you know, melodic stuff at the same time. But, you know, I got real, I think I put that sound down around 5 or 6 years ago, and I've never picked it up since. I can't stand it. I OD'd on it.
So, but definitely your sound is, seems to me from what I've heard to be pretty dependent on being at least somewhat electric, because you create definite sounds that way.
Because if I had I'm having an acoustic instrument made, actually. I'm going to tune it a little differently. At the lowest string will be an A string as opposed to a G, because, you know, to have a real bass sound from an acoustic instrument, that instrument has to be really enormous. So I let the bass speaker do the job for me.
But also the rest of the sound of the guitar. I mean, judging from the tunes that are on the public domain CD, it's percussive in just the way you even pluck the strings. But also, I mean, I don't know anything about what kind of pedals one uses in creating different guitar sounds.
Oh, I used to use them. I don't use them anymore. I just go straight into the amps.
Okay, so that's all coming out of your fingers and the instrument.
Exactly, yeah.
What's the sound? I mean, do you have a particular kind of, I don't want to say imitation in mind, but it almost sounds like you're trying to get something very specific with this percussion, almost slap string approach?
No, everything is plucked. Like, you know, I mean, because I just want everything to be really articulated, you know, in terms of rhythmically. So it's just real standard plucking the strings, you know, but not real standard in that it has to really be refined and changed so that you get maximum articulation, you know.
So a lot of that must be happening, I'm guessing, with a little of the almost deadening with the left hand with the fingers, where you lift up quickly?
Oh, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really I think, kind of infinitely complex to get into on the radio, just because I would have to, like, have a video camera to, like, physically show you all the different things. But it's pretty complicated, and, you know, you just practice and practice and practice, and eventually you get it.
I want to ask you then also about the musical approach, but let's hear another tune.
Okay.
As an example first. This is called Avalon, co-written Al Jolson, B.G. DeSilva, and Vincent Rose. And again, it's from the Public Domain CD. We're talking to Charlie Hunter. He's solo guitar on this CD, and he'll be with drummer Derek Phillips tomorrow night, starting at 7 at the Canopy Club in Urbana. You're hearing him on Live and Local. Called Avalon, Al Jolson, Vincent Rose, B.G. DeSilva's tune, played entirely on one guitar by Charlie Hunter. And I wanted to ask your approach to working these tunes on this CD. They all come from Public Domain, meaning that for the most part they're all pretty familiar. But I have to confess that on a lot of them I had trouble finding the tune sometimes. What's
you mean the melody?
Yeah, or just finding the melody. You know, like one of them
is. Well, it's in there.
I know it's there, but what's your mental approach about treating the tune?
Well, you know, to me, it's like each song, you know, on the solo thing. I don't want it to be like, you know, this solo guitar record where it's just like wallpaper. You know what I mean? It's, you know, you see these things as people as they're just plucking the strings, and it's like, okay, you know, what's really going on here, you know? But for me, like I said, the subtext is the most important aspect of it, is the drum feel, the implied drum feel. And with each one of those tunes, there's a very distinct implied feel, and everything has to fit into that feel. And, you know, I want every one of those melodies to fit into that feel, you know. And a lot of times they're very strong, but sometimes I'll obscure them in a rhythmic feel or a harmonic thing, you know. And that's, you know, because when you're doing something that's like a solo guitar thing, I want it to be complete. I want all the parts to make sense, and for the rhythmic implied feel to be really strong, and so that's, you know, how it ends up that way.
At this point, how do you change your approach when you're playing just solo versus when you add a drummer? Do you take out then some of those elements with a drummer present?
Well, it's fluid. You just adjust for whatever situation you're in, you know. I mean, that's part of, I think, practicing a lot, you know. You should just be able to make those adjustments.
It's all about practice, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I don't think there's any way around it, unfortunately.
Yeah, if we got any budding guitarists listening, just pay attention to what Charlie's saying here.
Well, if we have any budding guitarists listening, you should quit guitar and play drums.
Is that what you'd do if you had to do it all over again?
No. I mean, I just think that, I try to play drums, you know, every day. And it's not like I would want to hire me for a gig, but, you know, I try to play a beat, you know, to a metronome for an hour. And that's part of the practice, you know, getting those feels right and understanding 16th notes and 8th notes and triplets and trying to really understand those feels on as deep a level as I can. And, you know, I'm not the best, but I try every day and I get better at it every day. You know?
So you're not suggesting that a guitarist should exchange the guitar for a drum, but learn the drums so that you can get a good rhythmic sense?
Exactly, yeah.
Before I let you go, just talk a little bit about the concept behind your Public Domain CD, since we have played a couple of tunes from it.
Sure. I wanted to make a solo guitar record. I felt like I was kind of ready technically to do that and make it be a good record, a kind of a statement, not just like, oh, here's a solo record, you know. And I didn't want it to be my own music. I wanted it to be standards that at least some people knew, you know, so they could get a window into kind of conceptually where I was coming from more easily. And I decided to use all these public domain songs that are, I don't have to deal with worrying about paying everyone the $5 of royalties, you know, that I would be able to pay them, too much hassle. So I got my grandpa, he's actually going to be 100 next month. I got him to pick the songs out for me because he heard them all when he was a kid. So who better, you know?
And I assume you had something to say about it if he picked one you didn't like.
He selected about 50 of them, and then I winnowed it down to the 10 or 11 that are on the disc.
Yeah, well, it's fun to listen to. I'll give you a choice as we go out here. I've got a much older recording here, which I rather like the tune, and I like the trio setting. It's from a live gig in San Francisco. Or we can play something else from Public Domain. Depends on...
Play something from Public Domain.
Okay. I didn't know how unattached you feel to some of the older stuff.
Oh, totally. I mean, you just play it, and then you just let it go, you know.
In that case, we're going to play something extremely traditional, and hear your, I would say, unique take on it, which is the Derry Air, or as we know it with words, Danny Boy.
Yeah.
And it's Charlie Hunter, who's going to be at the Canopy Club tomorrow night. Doors open at 6. Show starts at 7 o'clock. It's in Inter-Urbana on the University of Illinois campus on Goodwin. And he'll be joined by drummer Derek Phillips. And I hope you have a great tour with this. And thanks very much for talking with us on Live and Local.
Thank you for having me.
Charlie Hunter's rendition of the traditional tune known as Danny Boy here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our program today is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, an authorized Karastan broadloom and rug dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. We also have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. Besides Charlie Hunter's show tomorrow night at the Canopy Club, here are some other events you can go out and see and hear live in our listening area. The Decatur Municipal Band is giving a free concert at Central Park in Decatur tonight at 7 o'clock. The Decatur Chordsmen Chorus are at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Decatur tonight at 7:30. Couple of shows in Springfield at the Alamo. It's Frank Herron and Blues Power. That's at 8:30 tonight. And at the Brew House, it's Frank Parker's Jambalaya Jazz Jam. That's at 5:30 this evening. The Summer Studio Theater at the Krannert Center in Urbana continues its production of the musical Title of Show tomorrow night at 7:30, and also Wednesday as well, and other shows continuing in rotation if you'll check out their website. The Nick Schroeder Big Band is at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. It's the Young Park Singers in Decatur at Cresthaven Park tomorrow night at 6:30. The Corn Desert Ramblers are at Clark Bar in downtown Champaign. That's tomorrow evening at 6:30. And Old Number 7 plays Bluegrass and More at the Rose Bowl Tavern in downtown Urbana tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. The forecast calls for a sunny afternoon and a high temperature of 76. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight, the low 57. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high of 76. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy with another chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high in the mid-70s. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLFM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.